The tradition of China's society was that men ruled while women followed. When you look at within China today, you learn that traditions are not forever. Ironically, thanks to a change in policy regarding having children, today's China holds within it a population of women who are strongly goal-oriented when it comes to careers. When it comes to the demographic math of the matter, today's women in China appear to be poised to play a major role in China's continued economic growth internally, as well as on the world stage. My next guest with her new book presents a firsthand view of this change in China's society. Her book is Leftover in China, The Women Shaping the World's Next Superpower. She's currently the Cuba correspondent for The Economist, previously spent time as a television reporter and journalist in Beijing, Roseanne Lake. Thanks for being here today, Roseanne.
Thank you for having me.
And a couple of websites, RoseanneLake.com and TheEconomist.com. Of course, RoseanneLake.com, you learn more about Leftover in China, and more importantly, get your copy of what is indeed a very interesting book. And the term in the title, leftover, that has a certain definition in China, doesn't it?
Yes, it's a certain unpalatable definition. Leftover is used to refer to a woman in China over the age of 27 who has committed the crime of transgressing the age by which she is considered, it's considered that she should be married. So any woman over the age of 27 is known as a leftover. And that comes, I mean, the term in Chinese is sheng yu, which literally means leftover woman. And the prefix sheng is the same as you would get in sheng tai, which means leftover food. So the association really is a very unsavory one. But it is not reflective at all of the women themselves, as I argue and believe very strongly.
Yeah, this is true. And actually, it sounds like China stole a page from pretty much every Italian and Jewish mother with regards to their daughters when you think about it.
I did think a lot about Italian and Jewish mothers as I was writing this book.
Now, when you read Leftover in China, as I did, I'm looking at this, and China in this recent time of transition in the here and now just appears much like America did as far as women were concerned in the 1970s. Is that an accurate comparison?
I mean, there is an element of that, right? You know, part of it comes from the fact that the 1970s were a time when women were, you know, in the U.S. were just starting to get into the workforce and just starting to get, you know, get access to higher education in greater numbers. And that's exactly what happened in China recently, right? As a result of this one child policy, you know, a lot of baby girls were eliminated because if parents could only have one child, they chose to have a daughter. But in families that chose to have a girl, they said, well, all right, you don't have a brother. We're going to educate you. And we're going to treat you as our sole heir. And that coupled with the fact that, you know, China's institutions of higher learning have expanded dramatically over the past 30 years, mainly because China has dumped a much greater percentage of its GDP into those investments. You had a lot more women gaining access to education and therefore, you know, entering the workforce. And obviously that changes partnership dynamics, right? It changes marriage more. It changes what women expect from a relationship. But because it happened in a rather, you know, short period of time, it's become a little bit destabilizing. And then the culture is sort of struggling to recalibrate itself to a new economic and demographic reality where you have many more educated women with different timelines for their young adult years. Not that they're shirking marriage altogether. It's something that many of them consider, but it's just not their first priority anymore because they have other alternatives. You can exist in China as a non-married woman, which was not true in the past when, you know, in the days of the work unit, for example, when there was no housing for single people. So everyone had to be married, men, women. You know, you showed up to your work unit and you didn't have a partner, they would marry you off. The head of your work unit would do that because, you know, that's what you need to do. And it was transactional, it was mercenary, and you just got on with it. But that has all changed. And, you know, now women have more of a degree of choice. And that, you know, that sort of rattled the traditions that surround marriage in China.
That's the thing too, I'm curious about, and what Roseanne does in Leftover in China is not just a book of demographics. She had conversations with women who were experiencing what she's touching on here and what they are living in their life day to day through choices and even necessity to some way, shape, or form. How does this new China, as far as this class of women, play to society as well as how is it different for these women? Because certainly the life they're living and the choices they're making, that's in many cases very different to the foundation that was placed upon them as they were being raised.
Exactly. I mean, for them, it's treading a delicate balance. I mean, many of them were raised with these great opportunities that allowed them to become educated, and parents encouraged that because as only heirs, you know, they wanted to bring the greatest chances for success and honor to their families. But they kind of got to a point where once women had achieved a certain amount of things, parents kind of said, okay, wait a minute, you know, that's enough. We need you to get married. And we're starting to realize that, you know, if you achieve too much, you're not going to be marriageable. And so please scale it back and, you know, give us a grandchild. So there's this duality that a lot of women have experienced, and they've talked to me about the idea of, you know, to an extent, feeling cheated, because many of these women are filial daughters. And when I say they tread a fine line, I mean, they really do. If they go home over Chinese New Year, which is this time of year, they will be subject, many of them will be subject to blind dates and to questioning and to pressure from parents, you know, relatives, aunties, neighbors, you know, offering to set them up on blind dates and asking them why they haven't come home with somebody. And certainly, you know, some of them just, you know, blow it off or don't go home altogether. Many of the Chinese women I now know in New York are delighted because the school year doesn't stop for Chinese New Year, so they have the perfect excuse not to go home and to avoid all that pressure. But some of them will say, oh, you know, after I was out for 4 years or out for 6 years, you know, I did my undergrad and my master's, and now I'm back, and now I'm remembering what this is like, you know. Or some of them say, Mom, Dad, let's go on vacation this Chinese New Year. I'll take you to Egypt. Let's go, you know. And so they avoid the external eyes of, not really the ones that sort of magnify the situation, because I think a lot of parents understand that their daughters are doing just, China's a collectivist society, and this issue of face, you know, this idea of how the rest of society sees your family is very important. So a lot of the pressure that the women feel is transferred to them by their parents, but pressure the parents get is transferred to them from people outside of the family. So it really starts to reach some dizzying proportions, and it is, you know, a confusing time of year. But at the same time, you know, these women are also very bold, and they navigate this situation, I found, with humor, with grace, and with resolve, and with agency, right? They are filial daughters, so they will make an effort here and there to make a show of, okay, you know, I'll go on this date, I'll appease you in that way. But they're also dating on their own terms. They're traveling, they're living their own lives. It's not impeding them from doing it. Every once in a while, they just need to check in and placate the parents, because, you know, being filial, especially as an only child, is paramount in China. That's a cultural thing. I mean, maybe in the U.S. it would be easier, maybe not for Italian kids or Jewish kids to blow off their parents, right? But, you know, like the average American kid leaves home at 18 and makes the decision, you know, going forward. That's not true in China. Parents, you know, are very involved in everything you do, from your choice of a major in college, from your choice of a partner in life. And so they have to navigate this. You know, it's a delicate balancing act, but I would say they do it well. You know, they find ways to keep their parents, you know, at bay while still pursuing the types of lives that they think will make them, will be most rewarding for them.
Wrapping up our time with Roseanne Lake. Her book is Leftover in China, The Women Shaping the World's Next Superpower, RoseanneLake.com, The Economist.com, and their respective websites. And you're listening to Issues and Ideas. How do the women that you spoke with feel when it comes to the fact that they have this opportunity to have a life of choices and opportunity versus either, you can call it either expected marriage or really a close cousin to arranged marriage when you think of the level of expectation some parents have, of rather than to have the life of choice as an opportunity versus sharing a life with somebody. I mean, they're their own person and they're guiding their own way. Is that an absolute plus for these women, or do they have, well, you know, if it could be the perfect world, this would be something better?
I mean, I think it depends on the women individually, but certainly, you know, marriage isn't something they discard. I think a lot of, you know, women in the book or women I've interviewed who, you know, aren't in the book, but who helped inform my understanding of the situation, they aspire to marriage, but it's not their only aspiration, right? It's something that they're proactive about. And if they find the right person to marry, they're very happy to enter that institution. And it would probably alleviate a ton of pressure from the family perspective if they did. What they're not willing to do is get married for the sake of getting married, or, you know, focus on getting married to the extent that it's going to get in the way of other ambitions. It's just another thing that they'd like to, you know, have in their lives, and they're working towards it at the same time, you know, as they work towards other things. And if it's not, you know, if it doesn't happen, it's not the end of their existence. It's, you know, it's something they'd like, but they want to make sure that they do it well, which is a completely respectable decision.
It's a fascinating book that presents to you the reader look into the China society that you never thought was in the process of happening. And toward the end, too, Roseanne also looks ahead to how the economic future of China has to battle the population demographic future of China, which is a interesting story on its own right. Irony, too, given the policies and the policy changes regarding family and family size. Left over in China, the women shaping the world's next superpower. RoseanneLake.com, the website. You can also read her work since she is the Cuba correspondent for The Economist at economist.com. Roseanne Lake, thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much, Chris.